Welcome to Beyond the Gavel with Judge Ron Rangel. I'm your host. I'm very excited to be here. Make sure to subscribe at our website at beyondthegavelpodcast.com. You are listening to Episode 3, Juvenile Courts with Cruz.
All rise. District Court 379 is now in session with the Honorable Judge Ron Rangel presiding.
There was a friend of mine on murder, and the judge's gavel fell. Jury found him guilty, gave him 16 years in hell.
Welcome again to Beyond the Gavel. This is Ron. I'm your host. Very excited to have a very special guest, a newly elected judge who actually has been working as a judge for a while here in San Antonio in Bexar County. Cruz.
What's going on, Judge? How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming. We're very happy to have you. You are a hot commodity in San Antonio, aren't you?
I wouldn't say all that. I mean, I do what I can.
Well, I just read an article on TPR, right. Texas Public Radio. What was the article saying for our listeners to understand who you are?
Basically, it was brought to my attention after the election in November that I will be the first African-American male elected in Bexar County District Courts. And it was brought to my attention. And so TPR reached out to me and had a conversation about that.
Well, that's exciting. That says something about the diversity in San Antonio, doesn't it?
It's growing. And we have a lot more work that needs to be done, but it's moving in the right direction.
Well, we're going to talk about juvenile courts, but while we're on this topic, we know that there's a certain type of demographic that gets arrested. Part of that, you're dealing with a lot of minority juveniles. Is that right?
That is correct.
So how do you think the fact that you are the first African-American male judge, most people that get arrested are male, something like 75-78%?
Right.
Yeah. Something like that. So understanding that, how does that apply with the role that you have now?
Initially, when I got appointed by Judge Jarrett as the associate judge, I never really thought about that. But then once I took the bench and I started working with families and I'm hearing stories from, you know, grandma, from mom, dad, even the kids that come before the court, probation officers were telling me they see a change. When they walk in and they see me, they're like, that's the judge. They're used to seeing somebody else, you know, maybe a lot older, female, majority times Caucasian. And the way I speak sometimes, it's they know I'm not playing. And we can have a good conversation. And so many of the POs, as well as the defense attorneys, they tell me that these kids react a little bit different when they come before the bench, when I'm on the bench. And they call me the mean guy with the beard and until they start learning my name and they get a little nervous. I'm in front of Shaw. I'm in front of Shaw. I'm like, yeah, you're in front of Shaw.
Yeah, so you got the ability to connect to them.
Yeah.
They have a certain way of looking at you as being relatable.
Correct.
Somebody that they can listen to and follow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and we all have our past. You know, and I grew up on the south side of Houston. You know, and I wasn't always the best kid. But, you know, I had a very strong mother that kind of kept me in line. And I fell off sometimes. Made my mistakes, paid my consequences, but then bounced back. So I've been there. There's nothing these kids, majority of them, that they have experienced or what they've done that I haven't seen or been a part of.
What is it about the juvenile law specifically that got you interested enough to get involved?
I've always been involved for some reason with juveniles. I worked placement facilities for juveniles if they can't go home. So I worked at those facilities. I did juvenile probation. I did Texas, you know, like I said, Youth Commission. And where I grew up, I see the way I was raised and who I hung out with, I see a little bit of that in each kid that comes before that court.
We're talking about your experience. You were a city councilman for the city of San Antonio. Is that right?
That is correct.
What was that like?
From where I'm at now, I feel like I can really make a difference with kids and families. I'm in the trenches every day working with families, probation, attorneys, trying to create better opportunities for these kids who've gotten themselves in trouble.
Earlier, you were mentioning that you used to work as a parole officer. Is that right?
So when I was an undergrad, I did my internship with the Texas Youth Commission. So I was there for a year as a parole officer. And, you know, I'd go to, at that time, it's called TYC. It's called TJJD now. But I would go to different facilities, had my own caseload. They kind of let it go, and I ran with it. And it gave me a lot of experience working with kids who were incarcerated and then out on parole.
So TYC is basically prison for juveniles.
Correct.
And so what's the difference between an adult prison and TYC?
Oh, it's called TJJD now. It's more of a state school now. They can go there, they can get trades, they can get an education, and they're around their peers. It's maybe very similar to the adult side, it's just different age groups and different outcomes. With TJJD now, if we send a kid there on an indeterminate sentence, they're released based off their behaviors and their progress. Unlike the adult side, you're given time, you're going to do your time until you're up for parole.
When I was a juvenile prosecutor back in the 90s, I worked in Hidalgo County with the Hidalgo County mm-hmm. District Attorney's Office. We took a tour of the juvenile facility down there.
All right.
And what was in the Texas Youth Commission. Mm-hmm. So now it's called something different. So one of the things that I noticed that it was very rehabilitation type orientation yep. that was related to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so how does that relate in terms of dealing with juveniles and why is that important?
That's the focus. That's the focus, is to rehabilitate not only the respondent or the juvenile that comes before the court, but also give resources to the families, because the kid can't do it by themselves. They need a strong support system at home. So there's a lot of different avenues that probation can use and to give access to these families. And that's the goal. And of course, there's consequences to behaviors that, you know, goes without saying. But at the end of the day, we don't want these kids to reoffend, or more importantly, end up dead on the adult side.
All right. So when you say kids, it's my understanding that somebody under the age of 10 cannot get charged with an offense.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Well, why is that?
Statute.
And the idea there is because there's an issue of competency.
Correct.
Right? So children are not considered to be competent enough to be able to stand trial and be charged with a crime. Is that how that works?
Yes, to a certain extent, or lack of responsibility to understand that what their behaviors are doing is wrong or are wrong. And being able to work with an attorney and understand the legal process and be able to put up a defense, they wouldn't have that ability. But you can say the same thing for a 10-year-old or 11-year-old, because it varies. It's not based on age. It's based on intellect.
So basically, the Fifth and Sixth Amendment rights that we have in the Constitution cannot be fully, you know.
Yeah, fully appreciated. Yeah, that's absolutely. Right.
That's right. Okay. So then a juvenile then officially would start at the age of 10?
Correct.
And it goes up to the age of 17?
Yes, with some caveats.
Yes.
If they're on probation, they can actually be sentenced to TJJD to their day before their 19th birthday, depending on the type of felony. And depending on the type of case that was filed and either pled to or found true by a jury.
It seems like every cycle judges want to raise that limit from the age of 17 up to 18. And I know that because you are now a judge-elect, as a district court judge, I know that you're precluded from making certain types of arguments.
Correct.
Or you can't advocate for certain things. But you have been a judge for a while. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Correct.
You want to tell the listeners what kind of judge you've been?
So right now I'm an associate judge. So I was appointed by the current district court judge, Judge Lisa Jarrett. And so I was able to hear all the cases with the exception of determinate sentence cases and motion hearings like lack of responsibility or fitness to proceed. But other than that, I was able to hear all types of cases.
So in Texas, we have something for adults called determinate sentencing. And for juveniles, it could be either determinate sentencings or indeterminate sentencings.
Correct.
You want to explain what the differences are?
Pretty much what's in the title of the name. Indeterminate is based on the kid's behavior. If they go to TJJD on an indeterminate sentence, if they go there, they do what they're supposed to do, they reach their levels, then they can get out sooner. If they're not doing what they're supposed to do, they may stay a little bit longer. On a determinate sentence, that's a hard number. So they're going to do that many years and up for parole for their 19th birthday. And it's up to the court whether to parole them or send them to TDC.
So by way of explanation then, in Texas, we have determinate sentencing. So let's say somebody gets charged with murder.
Mm-hmm.
They get sentenced to 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the sentencing is a flat 30 years.
Correct.
So if they get out on parole early, and people have this idea that folks get out very early on certain types of offenses.
Right.
That's not necessarily the case.
Right.
That's another conversation. But if they get out early, then they're going to be on parole through the end of that 30-year
Correct.
Term. In a state like California, they have indeterminate sentencing.
Okay.
Where somebody is sentenced to a period of anywhere from 5 years up to 15 years, mm-hmm. which is the same idea.
Right.
But the concept is they got to do a minimum 5 years.
Right.
And they will not do more than 15 years.
Okay.
Is that kind of how it works on the juvenile side?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So last week I had a conversation with Jim Bethke about the MAC, right? The Managed Assigned Counsel System. Now juveniles in Bexar County, the juvenile court system is going to use the MAC for court appointed counsel.
Correct.
What's the difference in your opinion that would relate to how the MAC would operate with the juvenile system versus the adult system?
I think the confidentiality. Confidentiality is huge on the juvenile side. Only certain individuals are able to receive the file and know what's going on in each particular case. So I think that's going to be the only difference. And some other things, because we have hearings a lot more often, a lot more frequent. So we have to make sure that attorneys are available. On the adult side, you can reset for a couple of months and you're fine. On the juvenile side, we don't have that much time.
That could be problematic as it relates to the type of information that MAC attorneys get, right?
Correct.
So then let's say that there's an issue that a child has with their lawyer. Let's say they want to make some sort of complaint with their lawyer and they make that complaint to the MAC. Mm-hmm. How would the MAC then obtain information to verify whatever it is that is being complained about?
That's a good question. I mean, that's part of the things that we have to iron out. You know, if they want to make that complaint, is the complaint on the record? Where is it documented? I mean, that's something that we really have to dive into and kind of make sure that we're looking out for both the child as well as the attorney, because we want to make sure that whatever allegations are made, that we can be verified and then take the proper action.
All right. Now, you are a juvenile judge in Bexar County, right?
Right.
But you can also handle any type of district court case.
Correct.
And I think a lot of folks don't recognize that. They think that because we have a designation, I'm designated as a criminal district court judge.
Right.
I can still handle divorces if I choose to. I can handle juvenile cases if I choose to.
Right.
What do you think about the idea that larger jurisdictions like Bexar County have given preference to certain types of cases to district judges?
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Yeah. I've been to rural counties where they're having a divorce hearing, and the next thing you know, we're about to try, a capital murder case. I'm like, hold on, what? So I'm okay with the designations.
Yes. But it sort of makes you feel like you're able to focus a little more in the area, become more of an expert.
Correct. Nice. Correct. And you're really learning. I mean, every day we're learning something. There's no fact pattern that's identical. And the way things are happening and how to approach different types of kids, different types of families and their allegations, it changes. And so when you're able just to focus on that and not have to worry about other types of cases, it's really beneficial long term.
Now, I know your wife.
Mm-hmm.
She's an attorney.
Correct.
I actually was fortunate or unfortunate, depending on how you look at it, to try a case against her way, way long ago.
Right.
She's an excellent attorney.
Yep.
And y'all have a child.
Yes, we do.
You have a new daughter.
Yeah, we have a 3-year-old.
Look at you.
I know.
So how has your work as a juvenile judge affected your parenting and the way you approach that?
I think right now she's still a little bit too young. But I do think about that, especially when I see these young girls come before the court, a lot of anger issues, or they may be involved in some type of trafficking. And you see a lot of the evils of the world that exist in school, in our neighborhoods, amongst even family members. And it gives me hesitation. You know, I'm really concerned, and I can't let it dictate the way that I parent, but I'm always thinking about it. I'm always thinking about, what can I do to try to keep her away from this? Because we all know as a parent, once they go to school, they're with their classmates majority of their time, and they're easily influenced. So what can we do, me and Michelle, to make sure that our daughter can be self-sufficient and not be easily influenced?
What's the best advice you think that you could give to a parent to help their child avoid the entire juvenile system?
Know your kids' friends.
That's a big one. Yeah. And so how do you do that?
It's different ways. You can check your social media, ask questions, meet the, if they want to go spend the night or go to someone's house, you know who that kid is. You meet their parents, maybe have dinner with them every once in a while, get to really know who your child's hanging around.
Actually communicate.
Talking, absolutely communicating.
Develop a relationship.
Yeah, that's huge. I can't tell you the number of times where the parents come in and say, oh, he's hanging around the wrong crowd. Well, what's, you know, Jose's last name? I don't know. What's Jose's parents' name? I don't know.
Yeah.
But if you can get engaged with your child's friends and their families, that would go a long way.
Times have really changed.
And they have.
You've been listening to Beyond the Gavel with Judge Ron Rangel. Let's take a short break. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast at beyondthegavelpodcast.com or anywhere you can find us on your favorite podcast platform.
Yeah.
This is question and answer period. Now, as you know, we are taking questions and comments through the website. You can email us there at beyondthegavelpodcast.com. Got a question from Carol. Carol, thank you for asking. Why do I get called for jury duty almost once a year, and some folks I know never receive one? Well, that's a good question. Summons go out according to two different databases. The first one is Texas driver's licenses. So anytime you go out and you get a Texas driver's license, your name is going to go into the mix. Also, when you register to vote. So every time you register to vote, that particular registration will trigger your name to go into that particular database. As such, if you have an individual that does not drive, that never gets a Texas ID, and that doesn't register to vote, they will probably not get called to come in for jury duty. Anything you want to add to that?
I think because Carol's awesome. So that's why she gets summoned all the time, because she's an amazing individual and they know it.
So somebody wrote down, Carol is just an excellent juror because she pays attention.
She pays attention.
She's smart,
mm-hmm.
Doesn't fall asleep, doesn't ask for too many breaks, is pleasant with the judge. Let's bring her back.
There you go.
I don't blame her.
There you go.
Carol, thanks for asking. I encourage anyone out there who has any criminal justice related question to please send them to our website, beyondthegavelpodcast.com, and we'll gladly answer them on the air. Welcome back to our podcast. This is Beyond the Gavel with Judge Ron Rangel. We're here with our good friend, Cruz. I'm going to call you Cruz.
All right.
Just because you're so easy to get along with.
I appreciate that.
You know, we were talking about a little bit about the differences between adult court and juvenile court. You were mentioning that the emphasis in juvenile court is on helping the child.
Correct.
How is that unlike a criminal, an adult criminal type court?
For the juvenile court, that's our focus. It's the best interest of that child. So whatever consequences or whatever restrictions or conditions that we put on a deferred or probation, it's going to be to try to benefit that child and maybe the family.
I remember when I was a juvenile prosecutor, we had a case where a child under the age of 17 was charged with capital murder.
Mm-hmm.
And there we had to deal with something called certification.
Right.
What is that?
You can certify them as an adult. So the state has to prove up certain elements. And if they can prove those elements up, that case can be transferred to the adult criminal side, or the juvenile judge has the ability to keep it on the juvenile side.
All right. So if a juvenile is certified as an adult, how does that affect the overall sentencing for that juvenile?
It's now it can be considered an adult offense. And so they can come over to the adult side and the full range of punishment is available.
A juvenile then who is sentenced on a capital murder case can't get the death penalty. Is
correct.
That right?
Right.
And that has to do with the U.S. Supreme Court decision and juvenile.
Correct.
The maximum sentence could be something like 40 years.
40.
Right. If a juvenile is charged with a first degree felony, like a murder case, can that juvenile get sentenced to life?
I believe they can, but they have to have the option of parole.
Right. And so the parole then is different for juvenile.
Correct.
All right. So when you analyze and compare the whole process of rehabilitation with juveniles, What would you think the success rate would look like compared to an adult that was sent to prison?
That's hard. And when I talk about that, we have a group of kids that I see all the time. But there's a lot of kids that I see maybe once, maybe twice, and I never see them again. And those are the ones that are successful. I will say that probation does a really good job of getting these kids through the process, making sure that they're more like caseworkers, social workers, even though they're not called that, trying to hold these kids accountable, but give them the resources. So I think probation does a really good job handling these kids and make sure they don't come back, with the exception of those that we see all the time. And we all know their names, know their families, because we see them so many times.
So in a way, juvenile courts sound like specialty courts.
We have those too.
You have juvenile specialty.
Correct.
What do those look like?
So I have a specialty court called the Family Enrichment Court. And so this court is for both males and females that have committed violent offenses, mostly misdemeanors. Every once in a while, we'll get a felony. But aggressive behaviors, mostly assaults to either parents, assaults to siblings, assaults at school. And if they can complete this program, it's pre-adjudication. Right. So they don't have to go in front of the court to plea out anything. They can complete the program and the case is dismissed. It's pretty strenuous. The counseling services, they meet with the judge twice a month. And there's a process that they're able to gradually move up the ladder. And as they move up, they graduate. And we have a little graduation form. And we've seen kids really do some really good things. But then also we can kick them out if they're not complying and they go back the regular route.
So think about attorneys that are listening in.
Uh-huh.
What advice would you give them in terms of how to handle their case in Bexar County if they're appointed on a juvenile case?
The first thing that I always expect, even for myself or the attorneys that are appointed on juvenile cases, is you got to talk to the families. You got to talk to your client, which is the child, but you also got to talk to mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, and see what's going on. It's easy just to pick up a file, read the facts, and try to move the case along. But you have to really care. You have to really care, and you want to see that these children and these families get the resources that they may need. So really diving in and being involved in each one of your cases.
How many attorneys do you think take court-appointed cases for juvenile defendants or juvenile respondents in Bexar County?
We just talked about that number, and I can't think of it on the top of my head. But what I can say is that once COVID hit, those numbers have gotten drastically lower. We don't have as many court-appointed attorneys coming down to juvenile as we once did.
What kind of pressure does that put on the system?
A lot, because what we're doing is fewer attorneys means more higher caseload.
Right.
And one thing you don't want to do is give a court-appointed attorney this huge caseload where they can't properly manage that caseload.
The numbers that I've observed indicate that juvenile detainers have gone down.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
What do you think is the reason for that?
I think the courts and probation are realizing that we have to give resources, like I said before, to the juvenile and the families. That does not benefit. They can't utilize those resources in detention.
Right.
I remember practicing when we had 200, 250 kids back there. And that did it was stretching the staff then. More incidents were occurring because of the number of kids back there. So probation decide, let's work together to get them back in the community, start giving them services until their court date, and hopefully they won't reoffend and they can get through their probationary period without any problems.
All right. So because we're dealing with children, I've always looked at juvenile cases as being sort of a hybrid between criminal type statutes mm-hmm. and rules and civil family type statutes.
Correct.
And so how does that affect the way you handle cases in court?
The timing is a little bit different. But also, you always want to think about the best interest of that child. That's always in the back of your mind saying, whatever I do regarding sentencing or different orders given either for GPS monitor or curfews, it's all about the best interest of that child.
Which means you consider like all the factors.
Everything.
Right.
Runaway status, them going to school, who they hang out with, even social media, things they post, their relationships with their siblings or with their families. You have to look at all of it and determine what's the best course of action to keep this kid from coming back.
What involvement is required for a parent to be involved?
Parents have to be involved. Okay.
So if there's a detention hearing and there's no parent,
then we'll either appoint, we'll appoint a guardian ad litem or the attorney's present and can fill in that spot.
And for folks that don't know, a guardian ad litem is different from an attorney ad litem.
Correct.
What's the difference on the juvenile side?
So the attorney ad litem serves as the attorney. Okay. Filling in for maybe a different attorney. The guardian ad litem serves as the parental parental placeholder. That individual is looking at more from a parental or guardian perspective and not a legal or attorney perspective.
So an attorney ad litem is there to represent the child as it relates to what the child desires.
Correct.
The wishes of the child. So if the child says, I want you to advocate for X, then that's what the attorney would be for.
Correct.
A guardian ad litem would be more like, I don't really care what you want. The best thing for you is what I think should be done.
I know you want to go home, but this is the facts. This is your behaviors. It's not the best process for you to go home right now.
So how often do the guardian ad litem and attorney ad litem's representation conflict?
Not very often.
Okay. So they generally desire this.
Yeah. But for the most part, it's all in the best interest. It's always in the best interest. And those who've been involved in these hearings for quite some time, they can kind of read the fact patterns. They look at the kids, talk to probation officers, and they know, okay, this kid may need to stay a couple of days, let things cool down, and then bring him back and have another hearing.
Let's get a little personal with you. I want those that are listening to get to know who Crew Shaw is.
Right? Okay.
Let's say you walk into a place and you see a karaoke machine.
Okay.
What song are you going to pick?
I won't pick anything because I don't sing. That's number one. But if I'm being forced, like I can't leave this place without having to pick up that mic and sing.
You're married. You're going to get forced.
Yeah, I'm forced to do it. It's going to be probably Outstanding by the Gap Band.
You give us a sample now?
No.
Well, I was talking with Jim Lastic about AC/DC. I don't think I could ever pick an AC/DC song to use on a karaoke machine.
I probably can't name an AC/DC song.
What?
Yeah, that's just... And I probably do know it. I just don't know if that's the title of the song.
I know that you like to box. Is that right?
Love it.
All right. So I don't know if you're aware. I think you and I have had this conversation. I am a professional boxing ring announcer.
Correct. We've talked about that.
And I enjoy doing that. I actually wrote my law school paper on boxing regulations.
Okay.
What's your involvement in boxing like?
I started off, I did this quote unquote celebrity boxing match. Maybe 6 years ago.
Was that when you were a council person?
It was before I was on council. Mm-hmm. And I've always tried to stay in shape, but doing that workout, I dreaded going, but I loved the way I felt afterwards. And then I was going through a little, I was campaigning for my city council seat or for the city council seat. And I've never been in the paper before. So I was in the paper and it threw me. And so it shook me. And then I sparred the next day and I got hit in the face and it shook me, but I was still there and I was still able to fight. So it really changed my perspective on going through hard times or things that you perceive as hard times. What I've learned is that you get hit in the face once, what you try to do is not get hit in the face again.
Right.
But if you do, you have to be able to maintain your composure and stick to your game plan.
It hurts to get hit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it hurts.
You appear to me, now appearances can be deceiving, so I really don't know, but it appears to me through that thick shirt of yours that you're wearing that you're kind of in shape.
I think so. I don't know.
So you work out?
Yes.
What kind of exercise tips would you give to somebody like me who's old and frumpy looking?
Stay consistent. Stay consistent.
Uh-huh. So what did you want to be when you finished college? What career ideas did you have?
I had no clue what I wanted to do with my life going to college.
Uh-huh. What did you get a degree in?
This is interesting. Juvenile corrections.
Really?
Yes.
There's an actual course of study called juvenile corrections.
It was a criminal law No, it's criminal justice with the emphasis on juvenile corrections.
What college did you go to?
I started at Texas Southern, and then I finished up at UTSA.
Very nice. Very, is that when you first came to San Antonio?
Yeah. Well, my mom's from here. And so I would spend all, you know, my holidays here on the west side. And then once I started college, I wanted to come back to San Antonio. So I have family here, so I came.
What's your favorite part of San Antonio?
East side.
How come?
It's just, I love the east side. I love the people over there. Just the friendships that I've gained since I've been here. Yeah, I like it.
Well, somebody's coming in from South Houston. They give you a call. They say, hey, I haven't talked to you in a while. Where's a good place to eat around here?
Oh, I'm saying, meet me at Tony G's.
Tony G's.
Yeah, meet me at Tony G's, and we'll go and enjoy some soul food over there.
What do you order from Tony G's?
The shrimp, the rice. That's about it. But, you know, I have a really weird diet. But everyone else eats everything. Their oxtail, tacos. People love that.
Looking back 30 years from now, how do you want people within the system to remember Judge Crushaw?
As a person that cared. As a person that cared and also never lost who I am. I've held several positions, and one thing I want to focus on is not letting the position make me who I am. I think my name is a very important name, just from, you know, my mother and my father naming me and the things that I've gone through my life. I think my name is powerful than any position that I can ever have. So just maintaining who I am, whatever I'm doing.
Any last words you want to give to anybody listening in?
I've always respected you when I started practicing law, because you were one of the very first judges that I practiced in front of. And the way you ran your court and the way you respected attorneys, defendants, families, I take that into consideration when I'm on the bench. And you're one of the judges that I try to mimic my style after, to a certain degree, maintaining who I am, but at the same time, understanding that these families, it's probably the worst day of their life when they're in front of you. You don't have to make it any more worse. You respect them and you handle each case accordingly. And being fair and judicious, I mean, what more can you ask for?
Well, thank you. Any piece of advice?
I'm not the best advice giver, but I would say never give up. It's just right now we're going through some weird times in our communities, in this country, and we're seeing things a little bit differently, but always maintain hope. Things are always going to work themselves out, and it may not be the way that you want it, but it will work itself out.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for listening to Beyond the Gavel with Judge Ron Drangel. I've enjoyed this conversation with Judge Crushaw here in Bexar County. Make sure to subscribe to us at beyondthegavelpodcast.com or on your favorite podcast platform. You'll hear from us again in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening in.